Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. We want to welcome you to Metron Live, the podcast coming to you live from Metron in beautiful historic Atlanta, Georgia. Metron people, give the podcast people a welcoming hand. We're very glad that you're here. Yesterday, when I was working on this outline, something happened, and I didn't even mention it to Ken because it's one of those kind of things that's hard to explain and sometimes difficult to translate to people. But there's a passage in the scriptures that appears several times, and it's the concept of someone trembling at his word. You see it in Isaiah, you see it in the Psalms. Sometimes it's I trembled at his word, or they trembled at his word, or it's God speaking, say, to those who tremble at my word. And I've really never paid any attention to that passage. You know, it's one of those passages, one of those kind of phrases that's so familiar, I haven't given it a lot of thought. But yesterday, we drove up to Amicalola yesterday, and it was such a synchronistic day. I won't bore you with the details, but it was just little perfect things that happened all day long. Just all day long. Something as simple as the hat Ken's got on. He was looking for he wanted a black one. We couldn't find it. We went to one of those they've got all those outlets that are there in Cumming. Is that where you're coming through there on the way? And he found one that he wanted. It was a certain style that he wanted, but it wasn't the right size. And it was one of those things where I said, well, we'll just order it online. But, you know, ordering something online is tricky because then you get it and it might not fit, and then you got to figure it out. And I would just rather try it on and buy it. It wasn't life and death, but this is just a snippet of the way the entire day was. So we couldn't find it. I said, we'll find it. Don't worry. He really had his heart set on finding that. And so we're driving back. And he says, I'm hungry. Are you hungry? I said, yeah, I am. We ate at the Smith House for lunch, but believe me, on those stairs in Amicalola, we walked those vegetables off. But just when he said it, I said, oh, well, we're right here at Phipps. Let's go. There's a, because it was at Saks that he wanted to find it. So I said, we'll just go right there and we'll eat at the food court. There's a farmer's basket there. You can get vegetables. We like that place. So we get off there, and I said, oh, you know what? There's that Saks Outlets right over there on the other side. Let's try that first. We walk in there, and we walk right to one that I said, that's nearly it, but it's navy. I said, you could nearly pull it off. It's so dark, it nearly looks black. So we were going to get that. So let's go back and look one more time. We go back, and there's just this one black one that was exactly right. Now you say, well, you just found a hat. No, the whole day was like that. It's like we were talking about it, and within 10 minutes, he was wearing one. And it was like half what we had already planned on paying at the mall. We said, well, let's try the outlet before we go to the mall. It was just that kind of synchronistic thing. People say, why do you talk about that stuff so much? Because the more you talk about it, the more it happens. Every word of your mouth is magnetic. I'm getting to this trembling of the word, but let me even say, Mom and Dad had to go to the dentist this week, and I've got to take Dad to get a root canal tomorrow. And it's, you know, for elderly people, it's kind of an ordeal, and I'm not totally sure he even understands what the process is. So, I'll deal with that tomorrow. But, and this isn't about my parents, because Mom was being very proactive about the whole thing. But I was even thinking about the stuff that people say when they go to the dentist. I hear people say, oh, I hate going to the dentist. I hate going. And I want to say, stop saying that, because you're sending bad mojo out for something that is actually going to help you. Nobody likes going to the dentist, but your words are working against you. Well, you know what I feel about it? When I go, I think, it's not like I just want to go do it, but I think I'm doing something good for my health. This is going to make me healthier. I'm glad that I have access to dental care. I try to say as many of the positives as I can. Like, well, I like that my dentist office is in my neighborhood. It's close to where I go. I like my dentist. I like, you know, I want to send out good words. And something as simple as that, because you hear people, don't you hear people say, I'd rather have a root canal than do that, because, you know, root canal has this negative connotation. Well, I'm not saying it's fun. I'm not saying I just sign up for them to get them. I'm saying if you have to have one, you might as well see that glass half full and say, thank God I have access to somebody who could do something that could possibly save my life. I mean, it's gross, but it makes the point. I told you, I was in Mexico years ago and went to pray for a woman who I'm sure died in the next few days. I had no idea that a tumor could grow that big on somebody's head. When I first saw her, I had to keep myself from gasping because she looked like she had two heads. And I asked through the interpreter, so what happened to her? And they said she had a cavity, and there's in this village, there's no dental care, so a cavity became an abscess, and it, you know, just to, and she knew she was about to die. She wanted to be baptized, so we picked her up. She weighed like 65 pounds. Picked her up and took her to a lake and baptized her. But I remember thinking, you know, instead of fighting the dentist, you ought to say, thank God, you know, I live in a country where I can go get dental care. Well, I don't have dental insurance. Stop snaring yourself with your words. I don't have dental insurance, but I believe something will come, you know, my God will supply all my needs. These are little things that you send out that affect the synchronicity of your day. Back to this tremble at the word thing. I know I just opened several windows there, but somebody's pulling that out of me, so whoever that is, here. I was trying to get my outline so I could get it out of the way and get it sent, and we could go enjoy our day, which I did, but there was, I was meditating on what I'm about to share with you, and I don't remember when this has happened. It's like it went through me so strong that I shook. I mean, it felt like I was having a chill nearly. I went, in the Pentecostal church, whether you went to a white Pentecostal church or black Pentecostal church, or like a lively Baptist church. Remember when those old mothers would do like that, or they'd shake, and it was called the quickening? They weren't faking that. There was something that was real to that when something happens to you and it causes a physical reaction. You know, we joke about it sometimes, like, ow, you know, but those people weren't, that was real. They were feeling something. Like I always tell you, I grew up in white church, and I'd see those white Pentecostal ladies do like that. Then when I got a little older and started going to black churches, and I'd see people go, you know, I think that's the same. You're just ratcheted up a few notches, but it's the same thing. It's got a little more flair to it. But I knew exactly what you were doing. But yesterday, this revelation dropped in my spirit, and I'm feeling it again just talking about it right now. It's like it shook me. I shook from, he didn't even know it. He's sitting there on his phone, and I started to explain it to him, and I thought, no, let me just wait till tomorrow, because it was kind of, you know, like when the scripture says Mary pondered these things in her heart, sometimes you just have to say, something just happened to me spiritually, but I don't know if I can talk about it yet. My title this month is The Secret Place of the Most High, the manifested miracles of the meditative life. And of course, I'm using the 91st Psalm, especially that opening line. King James Version says, he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. It's a beautifully written, poetic line. It's just got a nice rhythm to it. He that dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I mean, it ranks up there with, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. But I love to look, of course, you know, when somebody says, what translation of the Bible do you use? I'm like, all of them. I use about half of them all in one sitting. That's why it would be ridiculous for people to bring Bibles to my teaching, because if you were going to follow along with me, you'd have to bring in a cart of Bibles. But I want to show this to you. First of all, let me show you. This is in the Message, which, by the way, I didn't acknowledge this, but Eugene Peterson that wrote the Message, he transitioned about 2 weeks ago. He was in his 90s, and his family said it was so beautiful the way he went. He went with no struggle, no pain, and he started seeing people from the other side and talking to loved ones who were coming to get it. It was the way, yeah, there he is. It was the way everybody should go. And I was just glad to hear that he went that way. I'd like for him to made it to 120, but he made it into his 90s, so that's good. But anyway, thank you for that, Michelle. In the message, it says, "You who sit down in the high God's presence spend the night in Shaddai's shadow." Let me show it to you in the Orthodox Jewish Bible. It says, "He that dwelleth in the Seder, Elyon, or the covering or the hiding place of the Most High, shall abide under the Tzel Shaddai, or the shadow of the Almighty." It's the second time you see the word Shaddai, S-H-A-D-D-A-I. It's one of the names of God. And then let me show it to you in the Passion Translation. It says, "When you sit enthroned under the shadow of Shaddai, you are hidden in the strength of God Most High." And I think, do I have a fourth one up there? Yes. Michelle, let me show you. This is in the Lexham English Bible. It says, "One who lives in the secret place of the Most High will lodge in the shadow of Shaddai." And I wanted to show you these. Is there one more? Oh, yeah, that's the Today's Living Version. Thank you. It says, "He who dwells in the shelter of Elyon will abide in the shadow of Shaddai." I wanted to show you these. There's probably more, but I just found these five very quickly to share with you about that specifically don't just say he dwells in the secret place of the Most High. They use the name of God, Shaddai. Those of you from a charismatic background used to sing songs about El Shaddai, which technically means the God who's more than enough. But you remember when I taught, a couple of years ago, when I taught about Sophia wisdom and the female part of God, and it's very important because theologies that developed out of like Greek, Roman cultures used gods and goddesses interchangeably. Like the goddesses were as powerful as the gods were. What came out of the Abrahamic religions was much more patriarchal. God was definitely a he. The sign of the covenant was circumcision. I mean, women weren't even anatomically correct for the covenant. The theology is so male-oriented that it's a father, a son, and a Holy Spirit. Not even a father, a mother, and a son. It's like, you know, the Abrahamic covenant is very male-dominated, which makes the 91st Psalm very interesting because it's clearly talking about the feminine, particularly maternal femininity, because all of what he says there, Moses wrote it, all of it is talks about a mother holding her chicks under her wing. It says, "Under his wing shall you trust," but it's because the Hebrews thought the Bible was written by men to men. Women weren't even allowed to be educated. So that's why you'll see verses that say someone who says to his brother instead of his brother and sister. Y'all still with me? I'm getting to the shaking part. As Jerry Lee Lewis said, there's a whole lot of shaking going on. And I was going to show you this on the screen, but it gets so detailed, you know, the etymology of the word. What does Shaddai mean? It means a lot of things on a lot of tracks, depending on how you do an exegesis of the word. But two main translations that stand out is, one is the God who says enough. Now, the term El Shaddai is the God who's more than enough. You used to hear a lot of teachers teach on that. He's El Shaddai, the God who's more than enough. But really, when you look at the meaning of Shaddai, it means the God who stopped creation at a certain point. He said, all right, that's enough. Like I did 6 days worth and I'm done with it, or it is finished. What I'm trying to do is connect the dots. 2 weeks ago, Freddie stood up and said something, probably one of the most radical things that's ever been spoken in my ministry. But he said it in a way that I wouldn't change a thing. What I said last week, I wasn't modifying what he said. I was explaining to you why it was important. Because he said the phrase, we don't need Jesus anymore. What? I mean, that, there's some places you said that people take you out in the parking lot and want to fight with you. But you have to understand the context of what he was saying. And I've been teaching you this for 2 or 3 years now. I'm not trivializing what Jesus did on the cross. I'm just saying God didn't need it. God didn't need to send God for God to die so that God wouldn't be mad. But there's something very powerful about the coming of Jesus that's beyond him just dying on the cross. One reason we're celebrating Christmas is these Zoroastrian magicians that came from the East had no idea what the scriptures were. They knew that some super king was going to be born because they followed astrology. Where is he who's born the king of the Jews? We've seen a star in the east and we've come to worship him. So there was something profound about this person that we call Jesus, was the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. What's that got to do with this? All right. Hold that thought out there. I need y'all to come up here and hear me. Don't hear in your intellect. I need to. Jesus walked up on a mountain. When he gave the Beatitudes, he didn't come down to where the people were. He sat down the mountain and he said, come up here. I'm asking you to come up here and hear something I've never said before, okay? So I'm thinking, the God who says enough, why does he say enough? Why did creation stop? Why did Jesus say, greater works shall you do, not shut up and let me do everything for you? Why did Jesus say it is necessary for you that I go away? I'm telling you, people, what Christianity devolved into, the fact that it's even called Christianity, was so not what Jesus came for. So not what he came for. I think Christianity sickens Jesus. Because it's so not what he came to do. Which is why he said it's necessary that I go away. Don't you remember even when after he multiplied the loaves and fish, it says the people tried to make him a king, and he insulted them. He left and hid. Even at the Passion Week where he comes riding on a donkey, he's nearly mocking the people who are trying to make him into something that he didn't come to be. I mean, can you imagine if you were the team of people that worked on Jesus' branding and you're trying to sell everybody on the idea of him being the guy he comes riding in on a donkey? It's like he's mocking his own people, saying, don't try to exalt me. I'm about to leave here. Now, he does say, if I'm lifted up, I'll draw all men to me, but It was to draw them to the place that you understand when he said in John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Go look at what he's actually saying there. He's saying, the way that I found the I am is the way you find the I am. Till you become an I am. As a matter of fact, if you read the Mirror translation, it comes the closest to explaining what Jesus meant when he said, no man comes to the Father but by me. He was saying, if you don't self-actualize and find your, if I may coin the term, I am-ness, you can't find God. All right. The other meaning of Shaddai, and this is the part that shook me, is it literally means the God who has breasts. Some people say the breasty one. It's the female side of God. And it goes with the context. You know, when I was in Bible college, we learned exegesis. And exegesis means whatever you apply to the passage, If it's literal, all of it's literal. If it's figurative, all of it is figurative. Do you know why I'm not worried about the book of Revelation? It's because I know John was having a dream when he saw that. He wasn't talking about literal seven-headed dragons coming up out of the ocean. All this stuff, that the terror I grew up with, thinking that I was going to get the mark of the beast, it was like, that's all. No wonder evangelical Christians are so susceptible to conspiracy theories, because their theology is a conspiracy theory. They're talking about an end times that's not. It's Jesus never even talked about the end of the world. He talked about an end of an age. He says this age of the Mosaic Law is coming. And even now, once in a while, I'll still have somebody say, "What you think about people putting microchips in people?" I'm like, it probably makes their life more convenient. I mean, how many of you have got a microchip in your dog in case he runs up? Do you think your dog is worshiping Satan? No, it's like, I can hold my phone up to my face and my phone recognize. I can walk into Starbucks and go, "Oh, I need to put more money on my app." I go like that and there's $25 on there. Like in seconds. I look at my phone in sec while the guy's getting my coffee ready. I'm like, "Wait, I gotta put more money in here." Okay. I didn't worship the devil. I'm very grateful to whoever came up with that technology. Because there was a time I'd be like, "Oh crap, I don't have any money. I've already ordered coffee, I'm out of money." I don't live in that world now. Unless I lose my phone. So, El Shaddai, or the God who has breasts, the breasty one, the God who says enough, the breasty one who says enough, the one who has breasts who says that's enough. I was married twice before Ken and I were married. I have four children by two women, and all four of my children were nursed, thankfully. I mean, I don't think Christina ever even took a bottle. I don't remember her. Her mom went from nursing her to weaning her, and she never even used a pacifier. But I remember that was my only experience with it, because, you know, I don't remember when I was a baby. But I remember when I was married and the mothers of my children were nursing, I remember them both saying, "You know when it's time for them to stop nursing, and it's when they get teeth." It's not rocket science. It's like once that first time a baby clamps, because I'm sure it's painful enough just when they're gumming you, but when that first time you feel a tooth coming through there, you're like, and it's formula time, right? You don't have to put a time limit. I know some women have trouble with nursing, but in normal situations, you don't have to say, "I'm going to stop it at 3 months or 4 months." You'll know, because there comes a time when this isn't necessary anymore. This kid's getting teeth. This kid's going to be able to chew his or her own food. And for me, after they've got teeth, to be trying to cram my breast into their mouth is a little odd. And I know there's some cultures that apparently the women nurse babies till they're walking around and asking for it. That's a little, you know, I won't judge that culture, but that seems to be odd to me, that if a child is old enough to ask for it, it may be time to wean them off the breast. But when I was trying to connect these dots yesterday, you know, I'm not a legalist about words of the scripture, but there are words that fascinate me. Like in Psalm 133, where it says, "Behold how good and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity." And it says, it is like the oil that ran down upon, it says it twice, is the oil that ran down upon beard, comma, on the beard, comma, even Aaron's beard, down to the skirts of his garment. And I remember one day meditating, and I thought, why does it say twice that Aaron had a beard? Why does it? Why is that even? Why is that? Why did David even include that? Why did he just say it's like the oil that ran down upon Aaron? But he says it's the oil that ran down upon Aaron, even Aaron's beard. And I remember meditating on that one day, and I thought, oh, it's because a beard's a sign of adulthood. A boy can't grow a beard. A man grows a beard. That's when you know you are a man now. So, oh, that makes, I get it. The unity comes with mature people. Well, that means you heard it. You tell your mama, I'm a man now. Bishop said, I got a beard. What? Oh, I remember. I won't tell you that my trainer this week found a gray hair in his beard for the first time. He had to process that. He had to work through that a little bit. But, oh, Lord, I know this stuff. You know, I remember, you know, do you pronounce it puberty or puberty? I don't know. But, it sounds silly now. When I look at guys today that sag their pants, I can't really yell at them because when I was in high school in the 70s, we walked around with those Kiana shirts unbuttoned down to our navel nearly. Everybody did. I mean, the boys did. And especially when you were 14, 15 years old, you started getting some hair on your chest. What? You were like so happy about that. You showed that off, especially to the guys that didn't have it yet. You're like, just hang on there, little buddy. You going to get yours. Oh, it was awesome. You wanted to show that off. Because it was a sign of maturity. I'm a man now. I got hair on my chest. So there are words like that. Another line that always intrigued me is when John has his revelation and he says, I saw a new heaven and earth and there was no sea. I remember thinking, why is that? Why is these are things, I'm telling you, the stuff I teach, if I quote somebody, I will tell you where the quote came from. Otherwise, this is stuff that God tells me. You can't Google stuff and go, oh, that's where you got it from. No, I get this through meditation. But I remember thinking, why did he say, he made it a point to say, I saw no sea. Well, that's the world we're living in now. I can type little words into my phone and somebody on the other side of the planet can read it nearly as I'm typing it. Technically, there's no sea anymore. I know the sea still exists. I'm saying in the ancient world, whatever was on the other side of the sea was non-existent. You don't know what was people thought the world was flat. They've made up U-turn now, and there's people now that think it's flat again. People want to argue with me online about, you need to tell people the earth's flat. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to go online and argue that with you. The earth's round. I don't know what to tell you. Whatever. But the sea doesn't present the barrier to us that it did at one time. So in theory, there's no sea. So, I mean, I've taught on El Shaddai, the God, the breasty one. I mean, I've taught on that probably 40 years. I never, until I taught this, until things were said out loud that we're still digesting, I never connected the dots between Shaddai's shadow, the God who has breasts, the God who says it's enough, the breasty one who says, that's enough. And the reason Christianity, as we know it, has become so warped and twisted, and that there are over 40,000 Christian denominations, over 40, I think the last count was like 46,000. And that's not even counting all the little places that aren't technically denominations. They're just like Bible studies and, it's insane how much division there is. And it's 27 books. I mean, it's the New Testament's 27 books. It's the same story. A virgin conceives, has a baby, the baby grows up, they crucify him at 33, he comes back 3 days later. I mean, that you could preach that in a Pentecostal church or Roman Catholic church or a Nazarene church. That's basically Christianity 101. But there's no, you think somebody Pentecostal, charismatic, go and give a message in tongues at Catholic Mass? No. So much division. Why is that? Paul said, when I was a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I realized I don't need to put my mother's breast in my mouth anymore. Something that was normal at 6 months old now is bizarre and unnecessary. So now all of these people, because they believe the Bible, are thinking, I don't know what God's up to, but God's up to something. God's doing something. I don't know what it is. Or I would try to get here today, but the devil was fighting me. The devil did this. And they're living in all this make-believe stuff. None of that's going on. None of that's real. None of that's happening. I mean, none of that's happening. You know, some people thought it was over the top for NBC to fire Megyn Kelly because what she said about blackface for, and normally, of course, white people can never wear blackface. You should have known that. But even they might could have cut her some slack to at least, you know, maybe she just needs to learn better. But it's because of the other stuff that she said before that, like Jesus is white or Santa Claus is white. Remember that was her controversy when she was on Fox News, because some little black kids talking about black Santa Claus. She said, Santa Claus is white. And I'm like, Megan, Santa Claus isn't real, baby. If somebody wants to believe he's a Martian, it's okay. You're like, you really need to dial it down. Not only was Jesus not white, Santa Claus isn't real. Right. So she was judged on that. I remember years ago, I was preaching about something about racial reconciliation. This white man says to me, he says, you know, the way you seem to love black people, it seems to me if you went to heaven and you found out God was black, you'd be okay with that. I said, well, what if he is? I mean, like, what are you saying? Like, if you go to heaven, and this is back in the heaven and hell days, what if you get there and you're like, oh, snap, God's a black man? I guess I'm going to have to go to hell. Like, I mean, even if I was a racist, I'd be like, hey, if God's black, I'm good with it. We shall overcome. Like, don't send me to hell. I'm like, really, racism is that strong with you? Why wouldn't your thought be, oh, I guess I was wrong about black people? No, it's like, I can't do it. And some of the things I read that Christians believe or say or do, or I think, how do you get such a warped idea, especially from a very simple story about, you know, love your neighbors, you love yourself. I mean, it's like Jesus really makes the thing very uncomplicated. And he says, stop worrying about the Ten Commandments. I'm just going to give you two things to think about. Love God with all of your heart. Love your neighbors. You love yourself. Anybody that teaches more than that, they're coming up with stuff that doesn't matter. Yeah, but the Bible says, no, it doesn't. No, baby, no, no. Jesus said, love God with all of your heart. Love your neighbors. You love yourself. I know what the Bible says about stuff. I'm not going to argue with you because that was somebody's opinion. The Bible's the Word of God. Slow down. It has the Word of God in it, but those Bible writers themselves would tell you, this is what we thought about God in our day. We thought by now you'd be weaned off Shaddai's breast and put that away. Do you see why that shook me yesterday? Because I'm looking at it. I mean, you know, part of meditating the scriptures is like you're being a detective nearly. It's like you have clues. Like, huh, why am I so drawn to this He who dwells in Shaddai's shadow. Shaddai's shadow. What does that mean? Yes, there's the protective side of God. I don't want to ever lose my idea of a higher power or Jesus take the wheel. Kind of, like, of course. I mean, we felt it today when Marshall's singing His Eyes on the Sparrow. Yes, you want to believe in the parental care of God. I'm not trying to take that away from you. What I'm saying is there comes a time in your development where you have to say, no matter what I was taught in Sunday school, no matter what my ancestry says, I'm not saying that was a negative thing. I'm saying I don't need that now. And if I can just torture this metaphor a little further, I'm glad for my heritage. They say that babies that are nursed usually have generally better health. Their immune system is better and that kind of stuff. So there are things in my foundation that I don't want to disrespect those things. I love those things. I mean, the last few days I've been listening to so many of the Christmas songs, and some of them, the messages in them are so powerful. I don't want to lose that excitement that I know Jesus wasn't born on December 25th. December 25th is when the winter solstice was, that the Catholic Church tried to Christianize all the pagan holidays. That's why we still sing, at Christmas, we sing Winter Wonderland and Let It Snow and Baby It's Cold Outside, because it's not just about Jesus. When people say Jesus is the reason of the season, I'm like, you might need to do a little history. He wasn't the reason of the winter solstice. He was actually born first week of April. But I'm not taking that away. I'm listening to this. Oh, holy night. I mean, all that stuff works for me. I'm not having that. Honestly, I love it now more than ever. I just see it in its context. If your mother nursed you at birth, be thankful for that. It doesn't mean you still want it now in your adult life. And so much of what people think now is Christianity is people still trying to find something from God that even God Himself is saying, that's enough. It's enough. No, you have teeth. Stop. Eat your food. Yes. I showed you how to speak the world into existence. Now you speak your worlds into existence. Why else? And I'll tell you something else. For those people who say, you're diminishing the cross, you're taking the... All right, let me ask you this. If the cross was so special and unique, why did Jesus say, take up your cross? Because if it was just something that only He could do on Golgotha, then why would He say, everybody needs to do this? You know why? Because everybody's going to have to die their own personal death. You know what I mean. I'm talking about physically dying. I mean, I know what it's like for the person I was to die. I understand when Jesus speaks to John the Baptist on the Isle of Patmos, He says, I am He that lives and was dead, and behold, I'm alive forevermore. You know why I can relate to that? Because I can relate to that. And I also know when Jesus was resurrected, He came back. Many of those closest to Him didn't recognize Him. Mary Magdalene wanted Him. Remember, He's in the garden and she thinks He's the gardener after the resurrection. And she grabs Him and He says, don't touch me. Why? Because, of course, Mary Magdalene was in love with Him. That's not a scandal. When Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote the I Don't Know How to Love Him, Jesus Christ Superstar, he nailed it. Of course, she was just a woman. What are you telling me? This charismatic man comes into your life and changes everything, and you're not going to fall in love with him? Of course you are. She's a natural woman. Love's not a sin. People say, oh, that's so sinful to say. Of course she was in love with him. Duh. How else could it be touched with the feelings of your infirmities? Let me rock your world a little bit more. I don't believe Jesus was sexual. I can't get my head around that. But I tell you this, I believe there was a relationship he had with Mary Magdalene that was a romantic type relationship that you can relate to. And are you ready for this? I think he had male relate. I'm not saying don't go out here and say, well, now you see Jesus is gay. No, it's not what I said. But when Lazarus was sick, they came to him and they said, the one you love is dead. And when he saw his grave, he wept. I'm not saying Jesus and Lazarus were a couple. I'm saying love is complicated. And God is infinitely empathetic to the human condition. Did I just get too real? When people say the heart wants what it wants, yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. And you have to learn how to manage it and not let the heart get everything it wants. But the heart wants all kind of things. You know? But I can relate to Jesus coming back, because when Mary Magdalene grabbed him, he said, don't touch me. Why? It's the Greek word apto, opto. She was saying, I don't want you to be this. I want you to be that man. I've given up the hope that we're going to get married, but I still want to be with you. I still want to feed you. I want to be the most important woman in your life. And he says, no, I'm not that anymore. You know, the butterfly has a lonely existence because the butterfly can't go back and hang with the caterpillar homies anymore. What? Oh, I thought my fly was open. My worst fear. Oh, must really. See, you podcast people, this is why you should be here in person. Now you're like, what are they laughing about? I ain't telling you. Should have been here. I didn't say on me. But yeah, right. But you know, those of you who have had process, don't you know what the Garden of Gethsemane is? A thing that you went through that even the closest people to you couldn't possibly empathize with, and you needed their support. Can you not wait with me 1 hour? But I can't even explain to you the drops of blood that I'm sweating. This is my journey. And I'm going to need you to be there when I come out, but I've got to go in and do this thing. Look, you got to understand this. You can't go all the way to the cross with everybody. You can't. You can stay outside the garden and wait with them, but there's a thing that you have to look at somebody else and say, I love you so much, but I can't. It's there. Take up your cross. I remember years ago I went to see they had the passion play, the German passion play at the Fox. And it was so, I'm not saying this in a negative way, it was so Roman Catholic that Mary was actually in a nun's habit. She was dressed as a nun. And when Jesus goes to the cross, she tries to talk him out of it. She's like, please let me go for you. I'm like, wow, now that is a Catholic production. I mean, Mary is clearly the star of the show. Jesus is like a supporting actor. But the thing is, as much as, I mean, one of the hardest things you'll ever do as a parent is watch your kids go through their own death and resurrection and Garden of Gethsemane, and you want to fix it for them, but there are certain things they're going to have to. So if the cross was this unique thing that was just about satisfying God so he wouldn't kill us all, send us to hell, then why did Jesus say, you got to do it too? He was saying, I figured out my journey, you have to figure out your journey. I'm not saying I am the way, I'm saying the I am is the way. And you find the I am in your personal experience. So when he says, we don't need Jesus anymore, that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is, you're going to have to be Jesus yourself. We're going to need Jesus to see how it's done. Paul said he is the firstborn among many brethren. But let me tell you the good side to overcoming your stuff and resurrecting after your 3 days in the heart of the earth. When Jesus came out of the grave, he says, all power has been given unto me. See, once somebody's already been dead and resurrected, they're bulletproof. They just are. The reason I don't get nonsense from Christian people writing me, you know, hate mail and death threats, that has happened in years now. Why? Because it doesn't affect me anymore. There's nothing. I mean, after you've had Romans 1 cut and pasted to you 5,600 times, you're just like, yeah, I'm familiar with the, really? And now it's not even a blip on my radar screen. If it does happen, I'm like, well, that's where those people are now. I'm not even in a place where I want to argue with people anymore. Whatever you believe about the Bible, namaste, go with God. I'm not even trying to convince you otherwise. And I understand, after you've resurrected, some people don't know who you are now. I mean, I posted that. I wasn't even going to energize it, but I left here last week, and we went over, had lunch, and I get this text from somebody that I have other issues with that are not resolved. But what the person said was, I've been to 20 other churches, and I can't find anybody else that preaches like you. To which I want to say, well, what am I supposed to say to that? I don't know what. I preach every Sunday. I never stopped, never took a week off. I had somebody walking here last week and said, I'm so glad you're still doing this. Like, I've always, what are you talking about? Are you really that off the grid that you think? Even yesterday, somebody, I do this thing on Facebook every day. I do a morning and an evening meditation. I don't know what it's going to be. I'm just surfing the wave. But somebody posted, oh, I'm so glad to see you still do this. I'm like, really? I mean, I'm on social media every day on every available platform saying stuff constantly. I mean, it's funny to me now. I'm like, I know. And then I had friends of mine like howling and stuff going, you're preaching? I'm like, well, I'm looking into it. This finally quit after a couple of years after this started. I'd run into people somewhere and I could always tell by the position of their head. They go, hey, what are you doing now? Like, what I always did. Well, did you have to get a job? Like, no, the ministry supports me like it has my entire life. So I just do it with them. I go, it's really, yeah, it's really good. You come see us sometime. Might want to see a chiropractor about that. What's that got to do with meditation? All right, here's where I want to connect the dots, and this is why I keep taking you more and more into meditation. I know this sounds, you hear this all the time, it sounds such a typical new agey kind of meme, but the answers really are in you. We used to, in the old school church, we used to talk about, let's get a hold of heaven. We gotta hear from heaven. We gotta hear from heaven. Heaven came down and glory filled. Like, you know, it's all about trying to. Well, it was supposed to have moved on the inside of you. Well, I just can't hear from God. It's because you need to shh. Well, I prayed in the Spirit all morning. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, it's a sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal. Pray less, listen more. You know, some of the best advice you can give to most Christians is, shh. Just be quiet. And even if you don't get an answer, just by being quiet. Yesterday, we drove up to, we decided, you know, hey, let's, there may be a little more color. And there was some of the most beautiful color I've ever seen. Let's drive at the Smith House. We'll have lunch, and then we'll see where the day takes us. Well, he wanted to go to Amicalola. I guess that's the tallest waterfall in Georgia, I think it is. We've been there a zillion times. You know, I started to say, really? And then I thought, are you kidding me? Of course we're going there. It's like, we got one more chance to see. Let's do it. And I'm looking at it, oh, wow. You know, I was just here last year, but I totally forgot. This is amazing. I could have stood there all day long and just looked at it, because it's just amazing. I mean, you see all these different levels of, you know, like, wow, this, like, the water cuts through the rock. But that's a whole revelation in itself. That's the top of it. Look, it goes down, and then, but there's just so much, you know, you're looking at things, how many millions of years, yeah, I took that one. How many millions of years has that water done that? And it just keeps going no matter. I mean, I could get a thousand sermons out of it. I don't want to talk about it. I just want to stand there and look at it and listen to that. Listen to what that sounds like. Thank you, Michelle. I'll take you to the head of the class if you get this. In that psalm where David says, deep calls unto deep. Does anybody know what the rest of the sentence is? At the noise of thy water spouts. Meaning, this is where you hit the deep place. Is when you listen. Water is very talkative. You need to, you know. Have you ever seen that thing where some people have debunked it, but have you seen that thing where that Japanese doctor took bottles of water and wrote words on them? And when he would write positive words, it would create these beautiful crystals. And when he would write words like hate or fear or envy, you'd look under the cells under a microscope, or what it not, molecules under the microscope, and they would be all deformed just by writing the word. Not even speaking it, just by writing the word. I mean, if you're going to get a tattoo, write something on yourself that's positive, because that word is powerful. You know, I see some guys, they'll be like working out or something, you're born to lose. I'm like, really? You paid somebody to write that on your body. Wow, I'd get that changed. Now, I'm not against tattoos. I've got one too, but it's something that says it's positive. It's the whole earth is filled with his glory. Yeah, okay. But this is, I quoted Osho before. I want to show you this. Oh, no, this is not Osho. Swami Dayan Gitan, and he's talking about meditation. Remember, Shaddai is the God who has breast, who says it's enough. In other words, stop asking me for the answers. Go get the answers yourself. This is what he says. Intuition is the language of silence, the existential language. The word intuition means to listen within yourself. Intuition is the silent voice within, which is already in contact with the capital E existence. If you call that God, if you call that Jesus, fine. Intuition is the voice of God. The more you come in contact with the inner silence, the inner emptiness, the more you have access to your intuition. Silence is the nourishment for intuition. If something increases your love, joy, and silence, it is the criterion that is the right path for you. If something decreases your love, joy, and silence, it is a sign that you are on the wrong path. Do not compare yourself with others when it comes to take a decision. I think that should say make. Make a decision about what you should do. Follow the love, joy, and silence of your heart and inner being. when you are in contact with your inner silence, you just know what you should do. You do not have to think about it, and you do not need to compare the pros and cons. You just know. You can listen to the advice of others, but always listen to your intuition, to your inner teacher and guide in life when you make the final decision. The intuition, the language of silence, will always lead, you right. That's what I've been teaching about meditation for the last year. You know those kind of churches where people walk out and start immediately gossiping about everybody else they just went to church with? Where does that come from? It comes from people who, they're not quiet enough, so they're just caught up in the chatter. I don't like that sermon he preached today. She can't come here dressed like that. She ain't saved. Like, all that stuff has nothing to do with the Spirit of God at all. It's childish. It's childish. When you become an adult, you see other people make mistakes through their life, and you go, oh, that's a shame. Sorry for that. But you don't think about judging. You're just like, well, those are your life choices, and, you know, I guess you'll deal with them. I think I have one more. This is just a simple quote, but it kind of says everything I want to say today, and it's just this. Go within every day and find the inner strength so that the world will not blow your candle out. We were at this outlet mall we went to. They had a Bed Bath & Beyond outlet, and I do like candles. I was smelling different ones. I like to, when I'm at home, I like to burn a candle. And I got this one called Yuletide. I can't tell you. I nearly brought it in with me today to look, because we were sitting there last night. I was writing my meditation. I said, I'm going to marry this candle. This candle, it's like it has everything. It's like it's hitting great neuropaths in my brain that are taking me to a place of bliss, because I kind of smell Fraser fir in it, but it's not too, it's just, you say, Bishop, what? It's just a candle. No, you don't understand. It's like, there's so much connected to that olfactory experience. Those are good, you know, there's certain smells you make you think of your mama's kitchen when you were growing up or whatever. Those things are really real. What? She said burning things. It smells like the way my mama used to burn. Well, I can't say anything because my mom may be watching today, but I don't associate cooking smells with maternity. Yeah. There's something powerful to it. And I like the imagery that she used there about will not blow your candle out. Why? Because what does he say? The spirit of man is the candle of the Lord. King James says searching the innermost parts of the belly. The Hebrew actually says searching the hidden rooms of the heart. Let's do one short meditation before we go today. And I do want to get some, we need to get some new music too, but see what you got back there. And if you've never meditated with us, it'll just take a minute. You're welcome. You don't have to join with us, but you're welcome to. It'll be over with in about 5 to 7 minutes. What? You what? I thought BJ had a word. I need to say something. Go ahead. You take. Sit up straight. Both feet on the floor. Yeah, I would like that. Thank you. Thanks. It's the straighter you can sit up, the better it is. You don't have to close your eyes, but you may want to. Empty your lap. We're going to sit up straight. We're going to start breathing. You want to breathe in through your nose and hold it, and then breathe out through your mouth. It gets nitrous oxide into your body, into your muscles. oxygenate your brain. In the scriptures, the words spirit and breath are used interchangeably, so this is a spiritual experience just to concentrate on your breathing. Most of you know this already, but let me just say, don't stress about trying to shut your thoughts down. It's okay if your thoughts are just moving around for a minute. They'll settle down. Just if they start moving out, just very gently move them back. If you want to, thank you. If you want to do a mudra with your hand or just open your palms, you can do that. Do what feels real to you, what feels natural to you. But the posture is all about getting yourself in a place of receptivity. And we're just going to breathe. Inhale. Hold it. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale. Most of you have done this enough now. You're probably at a place of serenity by about the third breath. If it takes you a little longer than that, it's okay. There's no wrong way to do this. I start slowing my voice down. I start weaning you off of it. If you're aware of anything, just be aware of your breathing. Than he or she that is in the world. the Selah. Just pause and calmly think of that. He tapers off the music. Let me just say, I said this to you last week, but meditation is not just something I lead you in here or we do on one of our weekend trips. You can bring the lights back up. Thank you, BJ. It's a lifestyle. Like, if you start your day with a cup of coffee, turn it into a meditative experience. Like, don't just, if you have to get up 20 minutes earlier, then do it. But stand there with your cup of coffee and look out the window and contemplate your day and get centered. Because I'm telling you, when you wake up frantically and you're running late and you're setting yourself up for negativity, if you just get centered and get quiet, you don't have to go into a full meditation, but just have a moment of silence before you turn on the news, before you whatever. Just go inward, get your inner strength. Then you're not so freaked out when you're in traffic or whatever. The reason the tail wags the dog is because we haven't gotten centered first. So then everybody that comes along and says boo, you're overreacting to it. When you become meditative, the scriptures like a soft answer turns away wrath, those kind of things become real to you. You're like, somebody tries to pull you into their drama. You're like, no, this is your fight. I'm not having this fight with you. And I'm telling you, it starts affecting every part of your life. It starts affecting your physical health. You know, when David would say things like, the man whose heart is established is not afraid of evil tidings, that's the product of the meditative life. So that when you get some bad news, you're like, all right, let's figure out. I like what you said. Karen went somewhere this week that didn't turn out exactly what she expected. And she said, but the victory wasn't your word, but the progress I noticed was this would have really upset me before. And I'm like, well, this was part of the journey, and that's not it. So, and like, that's huge. To me, that's as much of a miracle as somebody saying they were dramatically healed. It's like, no, I'm telling you, you can't do that when you're on edge and you're you know, you start creating spiritual warfare for yourself. You know? Let's all stand. Did you get anything out of this today? So glad to see everybody. People I haven't seen in a minute. Love you. First timers. Yes. Eddie spoke that trickling into existence, and it sure happened. Please remain standing. Let's do this for the YouTube people. The closing, please.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy. Simply text the amount you would like to give to 404-620-5044. And now you can give anytime by texting this number. You will then receive a one-time registration form that links your phone number and opens your account at SimpleGive. Complete the form, and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page.
You're making a check, make the JES.
For additional information on your account, visit missionthenow.com and click the support tab. Then, my online donation. When you contribute to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month.
If you have cash, pay it forward. Go bless somebody with it.
Thank you for your investment in Metron.
I love you anyway, but if you went ahead and got your Christmas tickets, I would love you even more. That would be lovely. Thank you so much for being here. So some of you drove quite a distance to be here. So good to see. Everybody's looking good. You know who you are. I love you. You're going to have a very peaceful and productive day and a good week. Take this word. We've said a lot today. So take it with you and meditate on it. Spirit, soul, body. I've tried to get, you can't get her anymore. It's like trying to get Elton John. We will. All right, I love you very much. Go in peace. Angel Lord encamps round about you. You wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice in it.